Welcome to Inside the Tunnel, brought to you by VT Scoop 24/7 Sports. My name is Andrew Alex, joined today by Doug and Matei. What's going on, fellas?
Not a whole lot. I guess there is a lot going on. Spring game week, Masters week, a lot of good content out there. Was listening to this podcast, the Hokie Hangover, had Brent Pry on. That was a good interview that I listened to. I would recommend everyone check that one out to start your spring game week off on the right foot.
Yeah, folks, had Brent Pry on. Hokie Hangover, would highly recommend listening to it. Ricky LeBlue Nation, stand up. But and also, yeah, the only
Mike
podcast
McDaniel just can't get anything.
No, I'm just messing with Mike. But that podcast recorded from Nebraska on my end.
That's huge.
In lieu of my normal chief podcast officer, VT Scoop 24/7 Sports, or today I have Nebraska softball enthusiasts. It just said York, Nebraska.
Oh, I did see your buddy proposed on the softball mound.
He did. He did. It all came together.
Wow.
It all came together. It was.
And he got the local news to do a story on it. Like.
Yeah, I mean, well, he was the local news, and he met that girl doing a story on her. It was very, you know, shout out to my boy Nathan Brennan. Some of you Twitter folks may know him as the occasionally unhinged news reporter in Kansas City. VT alum, and might just attack anyone randomly based on their Virginia Tech takes, but great dude. We did the radio together at ESPN Blacksburg. We were in the same college fraternity. We were roommates for a couple of years, moved out to Nebraska, met a girl. Of course, had to make it a massive spectacle. So the challenge for me, explaining away why I was there without giving away the fact that something big was happening. So kind of had to act like a crazy person, like, oh, yeah, I'm just here for this random softball game. Why would I not fly out for this? But apparently, she didn't catch up.
I mean, if she was a podcast listener, she'd believe it.
It kind of lines up with, you know, your whole portfolio with Nebraska, so – you could have sold it.
It was sold well enough. Apparently, it was sold well enough.
But did you get to go into the studio with your boy Strickland?
I did not. Oh. I was only there on Saturday in Lincoln. I spent the rest of my time in a town called York, Nebraska, which was about an hour from Lincoln. Very isolated town. But if I figured out anything while I was there, York, Nebraska. Great people out there. So shout out to the
and they love the Huskers.
Shout out York.
Oh, they love the Huskers. I was sending these guys pictures of the Huskers man cave I was in. Boy, it was like heaven. But
Eric Crouch stuff everywhere.
Without diving too deep into that, getting people to turn off the podcast. We do have business to attend to. It is spring game week in Blacksburg. Very exciting. The first question I'll ask, are either of you guys making the trek to Blacksburg for spring game?
No, I will be in Chicago.
I will not be there either, and I'm very upset about it.
Are you, Andrew?
No.
Wow, that is a surprise. I'm kind of surprised.
0-3.
I was just in Nebraska. I pay money for an apartment here in Charlotte. I got to spend some time here, I think. That's just kind of my thought process. And, you know, having committed to go to every home game, you know, it's we'll take care.
It's going to be a little crispy out there. I'm looking at the weather. 66. Sunny, but 66. Winds 10 to 20 miles an hour. Not a deal.
And remember, VT Scoop subscribers. VIP subscribers will get exclusive access to Doug's behind the paywall article. How do the conditions in spring game affect the position battles and the ultimate outcome? Again, this is the kind of stuff you can't get anywhere.
I mean, that sounds like a good idea.
There you go.
Can Pop Watson play in the wind? We'll find out Saturday.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm actually hanging out with one of Pop Watson's best friend's dads on Monday. Didn't even think about that. He was telling me about Pop Watson before, before he even decommitted from Nebraska. So that's how far back we're looking.
Full circle.
But either way, I mean, okay, let's start talking about the quarterback room. And I want to briefly touch on some rumors that have been circulating in regards to Kyren Drones and potential poaching. Gentlemen, what have you heard? Is there any veracity behind this, at least as far as we know?
There's a little bit. I think when rumors that start behind a paywall end up on Twitter, they can be warped and twisted in ways that make it seem more accurate than maybe they are. And I think with Kyren, obviously, everyone knows the development he had last season. I think putting him into, you know, you read ESPN articles or, you know, other sites, and he's a guy that, you know, really gets a spotlight in this offseason, especially training with Cam Ward, Shedeur Sanders. So I think, you know, there's a little bit of that going on right now in college football in general. I would say that, you know, the specific teams that have been mentioned and the specific amounts are definitely not true. But in terms of Virginia Tech, like, and to the fans out there, like, I would not worry with Kyren Drones right now. Like, he's going to be quarterback one for Virginia Tech. I think that, you know, we're in a new era where things are undiscovered, and, you know, retention of guys on your own roster is like navigating new waters. And for Kyren Drones, there's definitely a lot of interest. I think, you know, most teams in the country would love to have a guy like that on their roster. And, you know, that's just the day and age of there's things going on and amounts being thrown out. But in terms of what's real, like, Kyren is at Virginia Tech. Like, I know that rumor got out there and people are worried, but I would push back on, you know, how accurate that rumor is.
I know. I mean, there's definitely poaching going on throughout the sport, on all rosters, beyond just Kyren Drones, at all times. I mean, you can just tell, even during the season, with the way things are, there's crazy stuff happening behind the scenes all the time. So the rumors don't surprise me. I think the only reason for them to, like, even become true is just if Drones or any other player was just like, I'm taking the money. Especially as a quarterback, an entrenched starting quarterback post spring, moving somewhere to learn a new playbook, learn a new system, learn a new roster, like, do all that stuff. The difference in money, in my opinion, has to be like ridiculously substantial if your goal is to make the NFL, because that's a huge risk to throw all the comfort and development and all that stuff that you have built up already in this starting position that you already own to just go hope it works out on a better team at a bigger program for more cash. It feels like such a short-term risk, given, like, you know, keeping with the Drones example, if he tears it up at Virginia Tech this year, he's improving his draft stock and making himself a lot of NFL money. I just don't, like, I get that there's crazy amounts of cash and booster money and NIL money getting thrown around where these rumors can start, but, like, for a starting quarterback to consider switching and throwing all that up in the air, that's a big leap of faith and would require, I think, substantially more money than what has been talked about, in my opinion, of, like, I mean, you could still make he's making good money at Virginia Tech this year to be in a very comfortable system that he knows inside and out, with receivers that he knows inside and out, with coaches and an environment and all that stuff. And to throw that up in the air, I just find it hard to believe that anyone, any quarterback, any starting quarterback at this point would do that to just go and maybe be the starter somewhere else.
And I completely agree with that point. Like, the NFL is very much in play here for Kyren Drones. It feels a little bit like 2016 Virginia Tech when you think back to Jerrod Evans, Bucky Hodges, Cam Phillips, Isaiah Ford. Like, you have all these wide receivers. This current iteration, you have Ollie Jennings, Daquan Felton, Jalen Lane, Bashuel Tootin. Like, this is the final run with those guys. Like, you know, some of those guys will make it onto the NFL. And I think Kyren is in a position right now where the money is not that important to him to sacrifice his draft stock, as Doug just said. Like, he has the rapport with these guys. He's putting in extra reps, even during spring ball, after spring ball. Like, he's working with these guys to be the best version of himself, to have, you know, for them to have the best connection with him as a quarterback. And I think, you know, the long-term play, obviously, for a lot of these guys is, I want to make it to the NFL. I'm in the position right now where I'm quarterback one, unquestionably. I know the playbook after struggling last season to adjust to it. This is the perfect position for me. So I would really not worry when people are just throwing out dollar signs. Like, that's not the most important factor to just, like, a guy to up and leave.
I will be interested to see, like, there will be some quarterback movement somewhere after this spring, and that'll give us, like, in the fall, it'll be an interesting, like, look at those players that moved in the spring and how they fare, and that'll give us an interesting look at, like, how possible it is to move post spring and hit the ground running at a new school at that point. I know they've tweaked some NCAA rules. I know some programs do not pay attention to NCAA rules probably. And you could maybe get up to speed enough to be like a good quarterback at a high level with that in that short amount of time. It feels difficult, and everything that we've heard for the last 20 years about the importance of spring practice and working with your receivers over the summer and multiple years and all that stuff maybe goes up in the air and goes out the window. But I'll be curious to see who moves, where they go, and then what happens in the fall in terms of, like, are they actually worth taking, or is it actually worth it to take a post spring quarterback out of the portal?
My indication would be, I doubt it, but I mean, obviously with the right quarterback, you can make
if you're good goal. Enough, right?
If you're good enough, right? If there's that much of a disparity. I mean, is there any prior example that exists of this happening and working out?
I don't know. I don't think the spring portal, and maybe it did exist because, like, Clayton Frady came in.
Yeah, that was literally what I was thinking. Like, Clayton Frady.
He didn't come in, right? He didn't come in until the summer, right? Like,
yeah.
So is there a difference between...
I don't know.
It's somebody that enrolls, that leaves right after spring practice and somehow jumps in. And can you get ready for the season in, what's that, 4 months?
Well, I mean, really, one month of real practice. PPR was post spring, obviously, as a defensive player, though. So,
yeah,
it's totally different. But again, I'd have to remember what was going on around the country in the transfer portal a year ago. I could barely remember what's going on in the transfer portal this week, right? So that's a good Doug research article. Again, VIP subscription. Get it now before they sell out.
I'm seeing a lot of content here.
Sorry, buddy. What do you got going on this weekend? Watching the Masters? Yeah.
Yes.
Watching the Masters.
Yes.
Me too.
Like, I'm watching my boy Johnson Wagner on the Golf Channel all week.
Have you listened to his new podcast?
No, but with Brendan DeYoung? Is it good?
Yeah. I've listened to one. It's pretty good. My friend, who has a lot more time than me, listens to them all and loves it.
Listens to every single one?
Religiously. I mean, there hasn't been that many yet, but
right. He's
like, you need to add this into the rotation, man. I'm like, you know, it's major season. Maybe I will. Maybe
so Johnson got the call up last night on Live from the Masters. Paul McGinley was out. A little under the weather, he said, and they put Johnson Wagner on the opening Live from the Mask. That's a big gig for him.
It's huge. It's absolutely huge. I would just be happy if they let me step foot anywhere at Augusta National, even in, like, the janitor's closet. But I digress here. You know, good insight on the drones topic. I think the overall metaphor I would think of in my profession, and I know in plenty of others, there's promotions you can get and take where you'll get a significant pay increase in the short term, but then you're kind of pigeonholed into that. and it's harder to move up from there. Whereas staying at your current pay rate and riding it out until you could go the other promotional direction is going to be to your benefit in the long term. And that's what I see with Kyren Drones, with the potential of going to LSU versus staying at Virginia Tech. His best chance for long-term success over time is right here in Blacksburg with the supporting cast that he has, which, you know, he has chemistry with and an offense that he knows. And like you mentioned, I mean, Felton got NFL looks. Jennings, if he comes back at full speed, NFL looks. Tootin out of the backfield very well could be an NFL caliber player. Like, yeah, it's not the SEC per se, but you know, this isn't the 2022 Virginia Tech offense, as if that seems like it was so, you know, long ago and in the distant past. But he's got the weapons. You know, I'd be very surprised if he made a move. Now we move to the conversation around the backup quarterback spot, though. And that's, in my eyes, what to watch for in this spring game. What have you guys heard, you know, in terms of what this hierarchy looks like? Is this going to be decided post-spring, or is this a battle that's going to be long drawn out into fall camp and maybe even throughout the season? You know, if you're a Virginia Tech fan, what specifically should you be looking for as you watch those couple of players taking snaps at Lane Stadium this Saturday?
It's going to be interesting because spring games can kind of be difficult to figure out how much to take from, especially the quarterback spot. I don't know how much blitzing they're going to be doing. I don't know how much, you know, you're going against your own defense in a bland, you know, they're not going to put much complicated on tape like that. So it's, they're going to get plenty of reps and plenty of snaps that I think you'll be able to take something, but I don't think it's going to be definitive enough to be like Pop Watson is definitely the backup quarterback or Dylan Whitke is definitely the backup quarterback. I think the battle persists into the fall. If it's just Watson or Whitke, I think they still could go to the portal to see if they can find some kind of backup to come in and give them a little bit of veteran help. But I do think you'll be able to see kind of like how close these guys are is really what you're asking. Obviously, if they have to start next year, any number of games, like the season's toast. Are they close enough at this point where you can feel maybe decent enough that that's fine, right? That is about the same as what you're going to get out of whoever you take out of the portal. I think you'll be able to see some of that in an extended action. I would expect them to play the majority of the snaps and Drones to get like barely any. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, with that many reps, if it was a big competition with a lot of people and they were splitting a lot of reps, you probably wouldn't be able to draw too much. But how much I expect them to play on Saturday, and especially if they're live. I don't know if they said today if they're going live with those two quarterbacks. It could give them an opportunity to make some kind of evaluation, but I still don't see them calling it before the fall.
And I think we've gotten used to as well, like even last spring, we were looking at Grant Wells versus Kyren Drones, and we were expecting a clear-cut answer, and we didn't get that until much later. And I think it's kind of the same thing with this. I think what's curious about the backup quarterback battle is that with Pop Watson, like we did see a little bit of it last spring where he had that bomb to Tucker Holloway for a touchdown. And it's like, that's the one golden moment you think of when you think of Pop Watson. Unfortunately, we did not see enough out of him last season because when Grant Wells was coming back, he was inserted into the game over Pop. It seemed like that was kind of the natural order of things. But I am curious to see, because like if Whitke puts on a performance like that, you know, we'd be talking about him in the same vein as a guy like Pop Watson. But in my opinion, like it still may be too close for comfort. And I think Doug is right in a way that, like, if it is still this close between Pop and Whitkey, you may look into trying to get a transfer guy to come in and, you know, an experienced guy. Like, we'll see what happens post spring. But, you know, from all indications, it sounds like it's very, very close. It sounds like Pop is slightly ahead. But is that enough to really secure it? I don't think we'll know that until the options are available in the spring.
In terms of battles, you know, along the offensive line, is a spring game going to give you enough? I know we're going to have mismatched teams, lots of different permutations. How you look is largely going to be impacted by who's playing next to you along that line. Is it worth a fan's time to try to take anything away as we look at the guys up front?
I think when you're looking, you know, there's certain position groups that, you know, definitely hold more stock than others. I think the offensive line, the defensive line, linebackers, you know, especially when they're playing live against live quarterbacks, which I think both Whitkey and Pop will be live. I think it's important to take stock there. I don't think you can make too many determinations from a spring game. I think it's like kind of like your rough draft for the season. Like, a lot of things can change. But, like, if you're a fan going to the game, noticing what the first five on the offensive line looks like, seeing you, obviously they're going to split the two teams into something that's relatively even. And I think this year we actually have a good chance of having two even offensive lines. But yeah, I think, you know, there's a couple positions that you can look at. Specifically, right tackle would be a big one. Like, it's probably going to be Montavious Cunningham, Johnny Garrett, Parker Clements, like those three I would expect. Montavious obviously looks like he's slotted in at guard right now, but I think there's still going to be a lot of movement post spring game. But it's a great chance to kind of see those depth players and, you know, see what roles they could have. Maybe, you know, guys in the secondary like Dante Lovett, you know, that's a great example of, you know, Braylon Johnson, guys that could play nickel. But other than that, like, I wouldn't take too much stock out of the game.
I think the biggest thing to look for is the individual battles, the individual moments. I think you can look at that at receiver and corner. I think, like, a running back in space against a safety or linebacker trying to tackle him. Definitely on the offensive, defensive line. Like, you can see those one-on-one battles and see who's maybe – you're not going to be able to, like – are they consistently winning those battles? But are there moments where they were like, where they flashed and they kind of, you know, a big catch by like a Chance Fitzgerald over a corner or something. Jeremiah Coney in space against the safety. I think especially on the defensive line or offensive line, if you think about, like, watch if, like, Leif Ganim is going up against Josh Fuga, and how he fares against the sixth-year defensive tackle who's played a ton of snaps. I don't know how many snaps Fug is going to get, but it's like those kind of individual matchups with that underbelly of the roster where you're just trying to see, you know, are these guys not only holding their own, but are they, like, capable of winning those individual moments? That's probably what I like we were talking about earlier. Like, the playbook's bland. The game plan, the plays are not going to be complicated, and they're not putting anything X's and O's wise on film, but, like, there's still those individual moments of athlete going against athlete where you can draw some things of, like, yeah, that guy's got the athleticism to play at the ACC level. I think that's what I'll be looking for.
And, you know, perhaps that's the most fun part we'll get to see, not just on the offensive side, but, you know, imagine just seeing Felton go against Dorian Strong, right? I mean, those are two very good players. You'd like to see how those matchups go one-on-one. So if there's anything I'm watching for, it's probably that. I think that'll
be like five snaps. You better be tuned in.
Well, luckily, I'm just going to record it, watch it on my own time.
Because remember, Andrew, what the number one rule of spring games is.
Clean jerseys.
No injuries.
No injuries. Clean jerseys, no injuries.
Clean jerseys.
One and the same. wanted to say.
I thought that's what you referenced. I was like, I guess that's a metaphor for no injuries.
I don't know. It's a poorly made one, but I mean, if you don't fall down, you can't get hurt.
That's true.
It's not true.
Well, that's not true.
Knock on all kinds of wood, folks.
This is bad. This is real bad.
All right, Doug, defensive side of the ball. Maybe a few more positions up for grabs. Specifically, who do you have your eye on?
I think the big one to watch, especially of the transfers, is going to be Sam Brunfield at linebacker. I know we've talked about the lack of complexity to this game from a game plan. Like, he's not going to be as challenged calling the defense and all that stuff in this game as he will during the season. But this is a guy that they brought in to be the starting Mike linebacker, and we'll get to see kind of where he is after 15 practices. He's got another summer and fall to really grasp the defense. He's probably one of the expected starters that I wouldn't be surprised to actually play a substantial amount. You know, like I don't know if Aeneas Peebles at defensive tackle is required to play a lot in the spring game at this point, but just the importance of like reps at Mike linebacker and playing within the defense at Mike, I think Brumfield is probably the defensive player to watch of the projected starters. You know, there's with the spring game, there's always going to be lots of guys kind of on the third and fourth lines of the depth chart that you want to look at, whether it's for 2024 or 2025 and beyond. But as far as like the starters on the defense, I think Brumfield is the one guy you're kind of interested to see how he's fitting in and how he calls the defense and all that stuff, because he's such a key part of what Virginia Tech's defense will be in 2024. It's like him and like it's on his shoulders to be a good Mike.
I do have some breaking news from Twitter.
Uh-oh.
Kyren Drones.
Oh boy.
Is looking for a sectional couch near Blacksburg.
Whew, again, the blood pressure today.
He's looking for a sectional couch.
Now here's Colby Crawford for a deep break on why would Kyren Drones buy a sectional couch if he was planning on moving soon?
I could read between the lines there.
Yeah, here we go. Shout out Colby Crawford.
Where do you get a sectional couch in Blacksburg?
From someone leaving town.
So if not him, now let's speculate.
Probably could ask a few teammates.
Probably a basketball player. If you get a lot of leg room.
John Camden has probably got a sectional couch.
It's very true. It's very true. We'll talk about basketball here at the end, but Matej, just want to get your two cents on the safety position. What players are you watching? Are there any younger guys that you think could potentially make a big jump, and who should people have their eye on?
Yeah, I'm actually pretty excited about the safety position, just the way that, you know, some of the coaches, I know Coach Cheetah a couple weeks ago, Colby was out there for the press conference and he gave a lot of praise to Mose Phillips. It seems like he's really taking that next step, and I'm excited to see. Like, he's obviously a physical specimen. We saw moments last year where, you know, he could really hit guys, but I think, you know, being in position consistently was his, you know, as any true freshman, was kind of his one flaw. So I'm excited to see him out there. And then, you know, a younger guy that, you know, I was not expecting a lot out of, but it sounds like good things are coming, is Quentin Reddish. Like, he's a guy that, again, kind of comes in that same mold of someone who's college ready in terms of his physical stature, but he's just been turning heads at practices. That's the word that we're getting. So I'm excited to see him in the game. I think he could be a really, really good free safety type player, you know, kind of center fielder type. He also delivers big hits as well. Like, I really like what I saw from him as a recruit, and I'm excited to see how that translates to the field. Like, I don't know how many snaps he'll get in the spring game, but he's one of those younger guys that I think really rose up the board, and I think he could carve out a role at least in the two deep heading into next season.
Excited for Quentin Reddish, not just because he was a great interview that Evan and I had now over a year ago, but also a Charlotte native and a guy who had a lot of buzz here in the area. Nice.
The Buzz City.
Buzz in the Buzz City. Wow. There you go, Doug. I mean, beyond that, any final thoughts heading into this spring game? I know it's you know, it's just one of, you know, a handful of practices that they have during this time of year, and it's easy for folks to make long drawn and overwhelming conclusions about what it all means. And we've seen kind of time and time again that's not always necessarily the case. But for the fans, with this glimpse of Virginia Tech football and a season with more promise going into the year than really can be thought of in recent memory, the hype is higher than it's been in quite some time. What's the final takeaway that people should get from this podcast as they look to go watch Virginia Tech play Virginia Tech in a practice?
You shouldn't overreact negatively to anything. I do think there are some potential positive things you could take away, but not too much. Like, keep everything in perspective. Like Andrew said, this is one of 15 spring practices they had, and it's they've had multiple scrimmages to this point that would be more telling in the progress of the team and certain players than this one will be, just because of the public nature. It's more of like a celebratory showcase fan opportunity than probably the scrimmage they had prior to this was the big one, where they're internal only actually trying to test these guys. I don't know, you'll see a lot of that, but you know, there's like a couple wide receivers flashing. You know, you're kind of looking for those wide receivers behind the top three, top four, like an Aiden Green or Chance Fitzgerald or Chance Wiggins, Keelan Adams kind of thing. Like, you know, I think there's some definite opportunities where you can get pretty excited about certain players, but don't get like despondent about players that don't play well or don't flash or don't play even. We don't know what the management of the snaps and reps and all that stuff is about. So I would strongly suggest not overreacting to the negative based on the spring game. The positive is fine to a degree, but the negative is, you know, we still got a full summer and a full fall camp before the season starts. So like, there's plenty of time for these guys to develop and get better and figure it out, to where a poor performance or a insignificant performance in the spring game is not that big a deal.
Yeah. Final thoughts. I would say over the last two cycles, we've seen a major influx of talent. As Doug was mentioning earlier, it's going to be a vanilla game plan, but that does not take away from seeing guys that are athletes going at it against each other. And I think it's a great chance to see that individual skill, you know, taking something that's vanilla and making something of it. I think we'll still see some highlights out of the spring game. And then second thing is, you know, there's, with Tucker Holloway, could be a little bit of an injury, not quite sure the extent of it, not expecting him to play. I know it's a, you know, a nuanced part of the spring game, but excited to see, you know, what Virginia Tech wants to do out of the punt returner position. Will it be a guy like Xavier Turner Bradshaw? You know, how will they kind of divvy up those reps, and, you know, will they allow them to go live? You know, again, very nuanced, but I think that's something that could have major implications if Tucker's out for a long period of time.
It's an interesting little situation overall happening at wide receiver. If you think about Gosnell going to be coming back from a major knee injury in the fall, maybe Holloway's, I don't know the extent of his injury, but like, we've been talking about Tech's extreme depth at that position all offseason, and it's kind of already having to show up.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly an interesting predicament insofar as, you know, Gosnell has the experience, but he's also sort of established himself as a guy who is what he is at this point. And especially when you add in the fact that not only could the injury just generally make him worse, right? I mean, we've seen that happen. But even if it's baseline, the time off and not having the time to develop when you have so many younger guys behind him who you think might have some higher upside.
It does feel optimistic overall that he's going to come back at 100% in September. Basically nine months after, like, counting on Gosnell is a optimistic, like, thing, right? I mean, ACL injuries, I think, is what he has. And 9 months is tough for, like, to return to 100% athletic potential.
Yeah, so it'll certainly be interesting how it shakes out. Last couple things I got for you, both on the hardwood side. None of this is breaking news to anyone, but Kenny Brooks, no longer the head coach of the Virginia Tech women's basketball program. He runs Kentucky now. Gone is Georgia Amor. Gone is Clara Strack, among a number of other players on the current roster, as well as some of the higher-end recruits that were coming in. Virginia Tech now run by Megan Duffy, a former Notre Dame point guard and WNBA player, who most recently coached at Marquette, leading them to a couple trips to the NCAA tournament. What do you think of the overall hire? What do you think of the departure? You see some people online not so happy with the way Kenny went about it. I would say it's a business. Kenny Brooks did leave his alma mater, in which he is in the Hall of Fame, to come to Virginia Tech. It's not incredibly surprising that he would leave for another opportunity. But what say you guys, both reflecting on the exit as well as with the new head coach?
Such a tough situation, just getting smoked in the face with a healthy dose of reality of, like, what Andrew was saying in terms of it's a business. I mean, Kenny Brooks left Virginia Tech to go to the University of Kentucky, a basketball mecca in college sports. I know it's the men's program that gets, but it's kind of the same. Like, University of Kentucky basketball is a big deal. And he has a huge opportunity there to become, like, a revered figure if he does what he did at Virginia Tech at Kentucky. More money too. I mean, it's a business, and I think what happened to Virginia Tech with Kenny Brooks has happened to many, many programs. And it just kind of stinks when it happens to your own program and you feel all the emotions. I definitely get the people that are like, I don't get the people that are one way or the other. Like, no, you have to say thank you to Kenny Brooks for all he did and that's it. Or no, you can't thank him at all. Like, there's definitely a middle ground where you can be, like, thankful and happy and appreciative of what he did for the women's basketball program at Virginia Tech, and also a little irrationally emotional about how the season ended and his departure. Like, and there's room for that to move one way or the other, depending on the day or the week or however long it takes. So, but like I said, I mean, it's a reality of college sports now. In terms of what happens, especially when you have success, is other people want your coaches. And then the whole players thing is just what I think I saw, was it Georgia Amor's mother was on Twitter earlier this week or a couple of days ago, talking about their relationship and how she came to Virginia Tech for Kenny Brooks. Like, yes, Virginia Tech was appealing and they enjoyed it and they liked the environment and it did so much for Georgia, but, like, it was about the relationship with Kenny Brooks. And that's the case with any sport at any program. It's like, this is not about your school. It's about the coach. And so it is what it is.
Especially in hoops more than anything else, given the size of the roster, right? Like, a random player on Virginia Tech's football roster might not have the closest possible relationship with Brent Pry, but
right.
A basketball player is committing to a coach.
Yeah, and if you listen to, like, what Georgia and Liz Kitley said all year about how much Kenny Brooks worked directly with them on player development, like, not even, like, he's a father figure I love playing for him. He's been so important to me as a person, but like so important to me just hands-on with the player development of developing your skills. Like Brent Pry is not doing that with Jaden Keller at linebacker. Like there's not that level of like appreciation and like that level involvement at basketball.
But even furthermore on the hoop side, you know, you talk about how success, there's always going to be people trying to take your coach, and in the ever changing landscape of college sports that seems to be gravitating everyone, regardless of sport, towards the Big Ten and SEC in the long term. And that's something that Kenny specifically pointed out, right? And I'm not saying this is going to happen, but Calipari leaves Kentucky. UConn wins their second national championship in a row. People are saying, oh, is Dan Hurley going to go to Kentucky? As if UConn hasn't won six national championships in the last 25 years. it's the Wild West. Brian Kelly left Notre Dame for LSU. There's countless examples. And as painful as it is, like you just can't take it personally because it is what it is for these people. It's their job.
I will say it kind of stinks over the last several years. It feels like Virginia Tech fans have not gotten to appreciate the legends that they've had the opportunity for. Like I think about Justin Robinson's final year and he breaks his ankle basically. And you miss like that whole January, February, March stretch of what that could have been. Like I think about Justin Mutz and what his final season became at Virginia Tech, of just kind of like a disappointing wrong side of the bubble year and what he could have done. And then like Kitley gets hurt, Amor leaves. You know, I just feel like you look, especially like on the heels of what Iowa got to appreciate with Caitlin Clark and their legend. And like, it just feels like Tech has been so close of like a full legend career and hasn't fully gotten to like Khalil Herbert having one of the best seasons ever in front of nobody in 2020. Like it just feels like there's been so much potential to appreciate these players even more that have just like come up just short of what was possible.
Yeah. And think about like all the Virginia Tech fans that are mad, like even dating back to Buzz Williams leaving for Texas A&M. And now obviously Kenny Brooks to Kentucky. Like I feel bad for Marquette. They're like the farm system of Virginia Tech basketball coaches. Buzz Williams. Now you got Megan Duffy.
Is like, Shaka Smart going to replace Mike Young as head coach whenever Mike Young hangs it up?
We're not starting that up. But like there are levels to it, I guess. And you know, Virginia Tech has greatly improved what they were to, you think back, like when Buzz took over or when Kenny Brooks took over, like where the programs are today, it's definitely a much higher stature and it's appealing to a lot of good candidates. And Kenny Brooks left the program in such a great position that Virginia Tech was able to go out and make a really strong hire. Like I'd be lying to you if I said I watched a lot of Marquette women's basketball games. Like I haven't, but you look at the resume and I bet if you were to look back when Kenny Brooks was hired to Virginia Tech, like the candidate pool was not as, you know, stacked up as it was this time around. So yes, Kentucky is like 99%, like I don't know everyone's situation, but 99% of coaches in women's basketball would take that program in a heartbeat, like what it has to offer. So, you know, you got to wish him the best, Kenny Brooks the best. I'm a little upset that there is no like final message or anything, but whatever. It's a business at the end of the day. Virginia Tech will be fine. Like it's the nature of this game.
Yeah, the last time Tech's women's basketball job opened, they hired a pretty darn successful coach from up the road at JMU, a G5 coach. And this time, I don't know much about Big East women's basketball, but like a higher level program, higher level conference that Babcock was able to go say to a sitting head coach, like Virginia Tech is going to be a better job for you than your current position. A little different level and just a sign, another sign of what Brooks did to kind of raise the profile.
Yeah. And not under sketchy circumstances like the last time that we got a coach from Marquette in basketball to leave his
sketchy.
I mean, we don't need to dive into that can of worms right now, but I'm well connected with the folks over at Marquette. It was
Andrew will be writing a behind the paywall article about the sketchy scenes of Buzz Williams's departure for Virginia.
Marquette, just a stone's throw from York, Nebraska.
Relative to other things, essentially. Lastly, you know, we got to talk about the men's side. Quite a few departures. Lynn Kidd, Sean Padula, John Camden, among others, all heading to the transfer portal. Some have entered and come back. Some choose to remain on the roster, but ultimately not a single regular starter from last year's team will be on the roster next year, both by way of attrition and then simply graduation, running out of eligibility. Not good, gentlemen, especially as the heat starts to turn up a little bit on Mike Young after two straight missed NCAA tournaments. What's the big picture view on all this?
This is what happens when you aren't winning games. You know, in this day and age with the player freedom of player movement, whatever, without having to sit out because you're transferring, like, this is what happens when you go through stretches where you're not playing good basketball, where you're not playing good football. Like, we talked about this at the end of the Fuente era of, like, it's hard to put into words, obviously, what the impact of a losing stretch is. And, like, you know, players start talking to their friends. They start talking to their parents. They start second guessing the coaches, like, and that kind of feeds through for a long time over the final course of the season, and then everybody leaves. So it's not a surprise to me that after the season Virginia Tech had, that a bunch of people were unhappy enough to want to go elsewhere, because that's what will happen in any sport when you have a long losing stretch at this point, because people think they're not playing enough Virginia Tech. People think the coach isn't using them. If the coach was using me differently, we'd win more games, or coach is using that player incorrectly or playing them too much. Instead, like, the second guessing just becomes a lot to handle, and the drama, and the, you know, it's just not a good situation. So it's not surprising to me at all that a bunch of players off a team that struggled for most of the year decided that they didn't want to continue with that team.
I think it's also twofold. I think we're seeing kind of a recalibration in the college landscape, especially this cycle for college basketball. Like, first and foremost, Virginia Tech, it has, you know, they're a football school. They're saying we're going all in on football, basketball. Like, when it does well, we want to support it. But, like, resources in general are going to the football program. And you talk about losing a lot. It's, you know, when you get to this portal cycle, when you're a player on a team playing a specific role for Mike Young, you're not really winning anything. And there's maybe better opportunities elsewhere to, you know, for name, image, and likeness. Like, that's kind of what we're seeing right now. Kind of the stacking of tiers between who's establishing themselves as basketball programs that are able to go out and say, hey, we have a great opportunity for you. All our resources are here. We can bring you in. You can win something. You can make a lot of money while doing it, and, you know, get exposure to potentially go to the NBA. Like, we're seeing that with this Virginia Tech squad. And I think the biggest thing is now it's time for Mike Young to work within his means and really show that, you know, he's a guy that maximized a lot of talent, guys that weren't recruited by high programs at Wofford. He brought some of those guys over. And now he has to kind of do that again out of the transfer portal. We saw a guy like Jordan Ivy Curry, a guy that had, like, I believe 18 points per game, like a really good shooting guard. They got Ben Burnham from Charleston. He's kind of a Tyler Nickel type of player. Like, these aren't guys that probably anyone that's listening to this has ever seen in their lives, but these are the type of players that Mike Young now has to target, because if you're not winning and you don't necessarily have all those resources, you're not keeping these top tier players, you know, guys like Lynn Kidd or Sean Padula that are performing, you know, towards the top of the ACC, they're going to go elsewhere. So now this is really, you know, we kind of teased it a couple weeks ago before any of this fallout kind of happened, but this is really like the Mike Young show to show how good of a coach he can be, the guys that he can identify in the portal that maybe the bigger programs aren't targeting, and how he can develop them to, you know, hopefully have some success on the hardwood.
Yeah. And in an ever changing landscape of college basketball, where it seems like to some degree, whether, you know, ideally it's not going to be a mass exit from Virginia Tech every year that would not speak well to Mike Young's chances, but either way, you're going to have attrition. Either way, you're going to have to fill those spots. And, you know, if Mike Young isn't the man for a new era of college basketball, given that his success at Wofford, and even early on at Virginia Tech, was kind of in a different world. So we're going to learn a lot about where he's at as a recruiter in this environment, and that'll speak to really, you know, what his chances are for having a future at Virginia Tech. So that is
basketball is interesting in the portal age, just because, and we talked a little bit about the difference in roster size, but like the difference in rotation size by the time you get to the end of the year, like seven players play by, like, the coaches in conference play hits and they shrink the rotation, and tournament time hits and they probably shrink it again. And all of a sudden, you know, you go from playing 10 players in December. So, you know, you can safely assume that the majority of your roster is fairly happy with their playing time of some sort. And then they just shrink the roster and almost half the roster is not playing. And it's like, all right, well then how many of those guys are going to say, I'm out, like, I'm not playing, I'm not a part of the roster during the key. Like it's gotta be a tough thing to manage for a coach of like, for the success of this team, I need to shrink my roster so I'm playing these seven players as many minutes as possible. That means these five or however many other scholarship players are on the roster are done and aren't going to see the floor for two months. It's like, it's not surprising by the end of it, they're like, yeah, I'm going to the portal.
Yeah. And of course, like, everyone who is recruiting you in the portal is going to sell you as that guy who's going to be in the heat of things, right? I mean, Naheem Aline last season when he transferred to Connecticut, I'm sure Dan Hurley sold him that he was going to be the guy. But in reality, he ended up with pretty much like the same, if not a lesser role than what he had at Virginia Tech. And then ultimately ended up transferring again. So
Rick Pitino, he's had some good coaching in his career. Some legendary coaches.
Very true. Got a good resume.
Yeah, quite the reference sheet right there. But either way, I know we got a hard stop here, gentlemen. So anything else, any final thoughts before we call it a day?
Who you got in the Masters?
Whew, I mean, like Scheffler, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, playing the best golf in the world by a large margin. If I'm picking outside of Scheffler, little Matsuyama back in the mix. He's been playing good golf this year.
No Oosthuizen in the field?
No, unfortunately. And I'll do a paywall article about how his performance on both the European Tour and LIV was worthy of one of those special exemptions. But unfortunately, the folks with the power over at Augusta didn't agree.
Fred
didn't agree. So we're going to have to go without that. So, yeah, I mean, Scheffler, Hideki may drop a top 20 on Matthew Pavone like Matthew Pavone. But it's hard to pick a guy who's never played Augusta when you've never seen him play Augusta, because, you know, as any golf fan knows, you got to put the ball in the exact right spot on that green, even if you're hitting your greens, or the world becomes exponentially more challenging, which is what makes Scheffler an interesting case. The man who can put the ball wherever he wants, but putting from just about anywhere seems to be a challenge that's been looking like it's on the up and up. So I'll take the favorite.
Yeah, he putts like you.
Fair enough. I wouldn't compare anyone to my golf game these days, but that's neither here nor there. Jay, any final words?
No final words. We'll keep everyone posted on what happens with Kyron drones. Pause. And a sectional couch.
Yes, folks. Thanks for listening to Inside the Tunnel, VT Scoop 24/7 Sports. Subscribe to the pod. Give the pod a little 5-star review on wherever you listen to your podcasts. And of course, get that VIP subscription so you can read all the wonderful content that I teased that Doug is going to spend all night working so diligently on. We will talk to you soon. As always, my friends, go Hokies.